not next week. So this morning, we want to focus on one very narrow historical event. This historical event is, to me, is interesting. To others, might be completely boring. But it's an interesting event in light of what we spoke about at length last week. Last week, we spoke about different perspectives on how to understand the role of secular studies and secular learning in a Torah tradition. And we talked about some of the challenges and some of the perils. You could slide over for the same money. We have more packets over here. This is Shaffer. Why don't we pass this to the back? We talked about some challenges and perils, and in that context, we developed some of the ideas based on the teachings of Rav Lichtenstein. And this week I want to focus on one incident involving Rav Avram Yitzchak HaKohen Cook, which gives us an insight and a window into Rav Cook's attitude towards secular studies, and also some of the complexities related to secular studies and the caution that we have. And this is going to relate both this week and in the future when we talk a little bit about leisure, which is not necessarily everything which is mutar is mumlatz. I'm about to. That was just a pause for effect. Don't worry. Mutar means permitted. Mumlatz means advisable. Those are not always synonymous. Not everything which is mutar is mumlatz. And so as we approach these topics, which get to the core of our hashkafa, we think about them in terms of what their propriety is, what their appropriate place is. And so not just is it a question of what's halakhically acceptable and unacceptable, a lot of it also has to do with what is appropriate and advisable, not just permitted. So the event we're going to focus on today took place on April 1st, 1925, and to that we're going to give some background. There was a Lithuanian Jew whose name was Tzvi Hamachuna Herman Shapiro. In the 1880s, he came up with the idea, and he was an active member of the Zionist community, of the Chibat Zion movement. He came up with the idea that there needed to be a Jewish university, an institution of higher education. And so in 1897, what happened in 1897? That's right, the first World Zionist Congress. At the first Zionist Congress, he introduced this idea that there should be a Jewish university, without a name for the moment, but there should be an institution of general higher secular education as part of this Zionist platform and this concept. And at the 11th Zionist Congress, several years later, it was adopted that there should be a university established in this new settlement that everybody's working on. At that time, it's called Palestine. Many years later, it's going to be called Israel. But there should be the establishment of a university. And there was a Protestant lawyer by the name of John Gray Hill, who had a mansion in Haratzofim, what they call in English Mount Scopus. And money was raised to buy this land in Mount Scopus and Haratzofim, and to renovate it so that they should open the Hebrew University. That's what it's going to be called. There was one tiny glitch that for 4 years put things on hold, and that was World War I. But after World War I, in 1918, the British authorities gave permission for the founding of the what was going to be the Hebrew University. They had a cornerstone setting. And that was the first steps. In 1923, I believe it was 1923, Albert Einstein gave a lecture on the theory of relativity at this new Hebrew university. The first few sentences he delivered in Hebrew, which was the official language of the Hebrew university for instruction, because that was in consonance with the Zionist vision. So I want to share with you, just from a historical perspective, some very interesting slides that I came across. This is in the World Zionist organization website where they show you some of the history.
No, Steve, can I trouble you to close that door, please?
It might be easier to see. This is a picture of the cornerstone ceremony in 1918 of the Hebrew University. This is a picture of the letter about the purchase of the land in Har HaTzofim. And here you see the construction underway. And this is what we're going to be focused on today. This is a picture, kind of a back view. You could see the throngs of people who are gathered for the opening of the Hebrew University. Speaking at this moment is Chaim Weizmann. I figure it should be known to some of you. And here is what we're going to talk about. Who is this bearded man with a spodik? That's Rav Kook. Speaking before about 6,000 people and many notable dignitaries who we'll mention shortly. There's Rav Kook's talk. This is the opposite view at the opening of the Hebrew U. These photos are from the National Zionist Archive. Lord Balfour, also an important figure we should know about, who spoke at his invocation. This is a copy of a Kartis Knisa, ticket of admission. Is that amazing? Hebrew, English, and Arabic. Wednesday, April 1st, 1925, 2:45 p.m. But on the top, Yom Dalet Zayin Nisan Tuf Reish Pei Hei. Na Larvi et HaKartis Hazeh. You can imagine how many Jews are trying to get in there. Baruch Hashem. This is the English invitation by Earl Balfour. We should get somebody to translate what the letters KGOMFRS stand for after his last name. That's quite a serious. And it's a British invitation. It's for the British dignitaries who are going to come to this event, which we'll get to in a second.
This have also seen it.
That's right. This is the program that you got. If you came to the event, you would get this little program. Remember, because it's under the British rule, it's printed in English. The Hebrew University. And first they have a speech summarized by Chaim Weizmann from when? From the 15th, from Tu B'Av in 1918, when they laid the cornerstone for the Hebrew University. Here we have, again, the continuation of that printed pamphlet. You had a presentation of the Order of Jewish Scouts. Yes, that's the Boy Scout equivalent. This is the menu. Of course, Yidden, we weren't going to go without a nice menu. So we have grapefruit, soup, mayonnaise of fish. I don't know exactly what that means. And then potatoes, shuit, ice cream for dessert. Delicious. All right, one more slide. And this is a pin. Tichat HaMichlala HaIvrit Yerushalayim.
Where did you get?
This is from the Zionist Archives online. Anybody can get a hold of this. So this is the significance. It conveys the enormous significance on an international level of what is happening at this event. All right, back to the shir. Let's close this, turn it off. Can I trouble you for the lights, please? Okay. So as you can see, this is a pretty serious event. Enough with the... Okay. This is a pretty significant event on many levels. And it was attended by very significant personalities. Literary personalities like guys like Bialik and others. British dignitaries. So those included Herbert Samuel. It included Lord Balfour, who you saw. Chaim Weizmann was there also for this. As you know, Chaim Weizmann was one of the most significant Zionist intellectual figures. It also included several Rabbanim, including Reb Benzion Meir Chai Uziel, I believe, who was present. And you saw lots of people from all different places. So Rav Kook's participation and his drasha on the front cover of your packet, you see a different picture of Rav Kook speaking at the dais. Thank you. So Rav Kook's participation was complicated, and for some, quite controversial. Because the Hebrew University is, as it suggests, a university. And Rav Kook was a gaon of the highest caliber. And so his participation at this event was significant. Because, as we outlined last week, how traditional Torah Jews view secular studies and secular learning and higher learning is complicated. And there isn't one view. There are multiple views across the spectrum. We mentioned last week, and I'll mention it today on the first page, there is an article in Tradition by Mark Shapiro, who is a professor in the University of Scranton, who's wrote several books, and one book is focuses a lot on the Beis Medrash LeRabbanim, about the rabbinical seminary in Berlin that we mentioned in passing last week, where last week we learned the introduction of Rav Yechiel Yaakov Weinberg, the Sridi Eish, about the concept of integrating for the Beis Medrash LeRabbanim. His predecessor, before the Sridi Eish, was what we call him by his sefer, although his mother didn't call him that. His sefer is called the Shilas and Tshuvas Melamed Lehoel. Melamed Lehoel was Rav David Tzvi Hoffman, who also was educated in two worlds. Rav David Tzvi Hoffman dies in 1921, 4 years before this, but there had already been conversation. So Rav David Tzvi Hoffman, before he died, wrote several letters about the establishment of a Jewish university, the Hebrew University, and what his view was. So Mark Shapiro, in this Tradition article from, I don't know, 15 years ago, sometime like that, he quotes these, he gives you them in English, and where you see how, if you look on page 1, this in the second letter, he thinks that it's a mistake for the Orthodox not to be involved in the Hebrew University. Although many believe that participation in this undertaking can be regarded as assisting the work of synods, I hold the contrary opinion, that abandoning of such an institution to the circle of the enemies of traditional Judaism is more of a support and furtherance of this direction than they themselves could ever have wished for. Next paragraph, I think, therefore, that the Orthodox must endeavor to win the greatest influence over this institution, and since it will not succeed totally excluding the reform elements, two faculties must be established, etc. So Rav David Tzvi Hoffman suggests, he says, we should be involved, but we shouldn't have unified teaching platforms. We should establish two faculties. You have the traditional faculties, the Orthodox faculties, and then you should have the non-Orthodox faculties. Now, obviously, this, historically, we know, never came to fruition. But his idea of being engaged is something that was positive. One of the teachers, this was the name of Dr. Frankel, was approached by Rav Kook in 1928 to join the faculty of the Hebrew University, because Rav Kook thought and felt, as we'll talk about in a little bit, that the more frum chevra, to use a more Hamish term, the more Orthodox and Torah-minded faculty there will be, that's how it will have an influence on the whole institution. 4 years after Rav David Tzvi Hoffman dies, the board of the representatives of the Beis Medrash LeRabbanim in Berlin sent a congratulatory letter to the Hebrew University for the opening ceremony. Now, I'm not sure if Rav David Tzvi Hoffman would have approved of that, because in the end, the Hebrew University did not have separate faculties in terms of observant and non-observant. But the idea that this institution of the Beis Medrash Rabbanim in Berlin understood the importance of synthesis and could see the value of secular studies in the context, to some extent, of Torah learning, that's one perspective. However, as we know, there was another strong perspective, and that appears on page 2. It's not too often that we put source pages in these packets that I can't read and have no idea what they say, but I thought this was interesting anyway. I have no idea what it says over here. But this is a Xerox copy of a newspaper that Rav David Tzvi Hoffman references earlier in a different letter, in a different context. He didn't see this one, because this at the top left, you see, 23rd April 1925. How I found this is also thanks to searching the internet, and you can find a lot of interesting things online if you have the Siyata Dishmaya. This is a newspaper called Dear Israelite Blätter. Now, I don't speak any German at all, but I do see on the top left the words Chofetz Chaim and something about university something or other.
Opening.
Oh, that's what it is?
Yeah.
Offenung means opening.
Yeah.
Great. So the opening of the university, this is a newspaper from whom? From the Agudas Yisrael. This is the German edition. This is the German Aguda Voice, the German Aguda newspaper, written in German. This continues, by the way. It's an old newspaper. It continues until around Kristallnacht. But this was, if you wanted to be in the know, and you were in the Aguda community, so you would read this newspaper. And again, I didn't put it on there because they have advertisements and they have other shtiglach, a lot of interesting things. So here you have a report from Vilna, 15th of April, about the Chofetz Chaim's open letter about the university in Yerushalayim, which I can't read, but from what is summarized in a secondary work that I saw, was not complimentary at all. Neither were the other reflections. If you look down in the next section, where the underline, Besdim der Oberrabbiner Sonnenfeld. Who's that? That's Rav Yosef Chaim Sonnenfeld, the head of the Yishuv HaYashan in Yerushalayim, and his Besdin, who vociferously opposed Rav Kook in many of his Yishuv HaChadash ideas and practices, and was extremely opposed to the establishment of the Hebrew University in Yerushalayim. This dates back to an earlier controversy from the 19th century, when before this, in a different context, there was actually a ban that a group of rabbanim, including Rav Shmuel Salant, who later became the chief rabbi of Yerushalayim, put against teaching secular studies in Yerushalayim. It was a cherem proposed. And that caused another dispute, because then a very well-known Zionist figure, Rabbi Yechiel Michal Pinas, who came to Yerushalayim and was involved in this, got into this controversy and sent a letter to Rav Dovid Karliner, who was one of the greatest Gaonim in all of Europe, who then said that that ban was not in force on the new institutions that were coming. So there's kind of like this old controversy in the back from the 19th century that's now creeping up again, and here we have again a machlokas of how to view the establishment of the Hebrew University and Har HaTzofim, which is going to be teaching secular studies. Yes?
Isn't it interesting that this is written in German instead of Yiddish? Doesn't that already say that certain secular studies are acceptable? Because it's not in Yiddish.
So, it's an interesting observation, but this is meant not for rabbis or for yeshiva students. This is meant for, this is your, you know, fill in the Jewish week, the Jewish star, the Jewish news, the Jewish whatever. Oh, thank you so much. The Jewish press.
And a lot of German Jews did not use Yiddish as a matter of
principle. Oh, thank you so
much.
So now we come to our story. So, excuse me. One thing you should be aware, this is a very interesting volume, which we're not going to focus on, but I put it out there. This volume is called Bein Shnei Kohanim Gedolim, Between Two Great Kohanim. And those were Rav Kook and the Chofetz Chaim. They exchanged letters, and their students and their circles exchanged letters. So it should be well understood, and there is a letter here from the son-in-law of the Chofetz Chaim that was written after Rav Kook participated in the inauguration ceremony, which demonstrates that the Chofetz Chaim did not diminish his respect for Rav Kook afterwards. But you should just be aware that even though there are many controversies that exist in the world and that you'll hear about, these two figures, and Rav Yosef Chaim Sonnenfeld and Rav Kook themselves, they had a very close personal mutual respect and affinity for each other. So this is just an interesting volume. When I saw it in Israel, I had to get a hold of it, and I lent it to Rav Schwartz, he should live and be well, because he was very interested in it. There are a lot of interesting things in this book and a lot of interesting pictures, including the Levaya of the Chofetz Chaim. And you could see the women standing in the women's gallery in the yeshiva in Radin, and that he's being taken out. I want to show you the picture. This is a picture just of Rav Kook in the Beit HaRav Heichal of the yeshiva, which is about the size of this room. You can go there today. Next time you're in Yerushalayim, I highly recommend it. They have a beautiful little matzeget in the front. They have English tours. It doesn't take a long time. If you're downtown Yerushalayim, it's an awesome place to stop in. The room, it looks exactly like this. Exactly. It's an amazing thing. I could tell you just from a personal standpoint that the Aron Kodesh looks the same way it is. The benches are exactly the same original wood benches from the 1920s. So when we had the great zechus to be there with our children in February, so we went and we davened there. So Chaim says to me after he finished duchening, they told me to go up and duchen on the top. I told him I couldn't do that, but Chaim didn't, you know, he went to duchen on the top. So he said to me after, he said, I duchen in the same place that Rabbi Cook duchen.
Wow. Made an impression.
So you can, located? This is, if you go down Yafo, right on your right-hand side is going to be Kikar Tzion. On your left-hand side, there's a small street called Rehov HaRav Cook. It used to be kind of a, it used to be a quiet, nothing street, and now there are like four new buildings that are all coming up. So you have to go make a little left into a tiny alleyway, and then a right, and you go up the stairs, and there it is. That's right. That's right.
Did you know that the grandson was a rabbi at Cowies in Chicago?
First rabbi,
I did not know.
KJ was a grandson of Chafetz Chaim, Rabbi Kagan.
Oh, I did not know that.
Yeah. I thought I saw
that. That is Chicago pride. So it's interesting when you look, actually, if you see the picture, and I'll just take one more second, you guys can't see it in the back. If you see the picture of the Chofetz Chaim's Levaya, when he's being taken out on the stretcher, you can actually see next to him is a set of bound volumes of the Mishneh Berurah, which I assume they buried with him, which is why it was next to him. He went around Europe. You can imagine the Chofetz Chaim. He went around Europe selling his Sfarim. That's how he got them distributed. He didn't have a distribution center. So anyway, this is an interesting story, but just so you should understand the context of, even though the Chofetz Chaim opposed the Hebrew University, it doesn't mean that he didn't get along well with Rav Kook. And then the book that we're going to read now is this. Now, I couldn't get a hold of this book in regular, so I had it just printed at Staples and bound. This is called Chazon HaGeula. This is published years ago by Rav Meir Berlin, Rav Meir Bar Ilan. And he collected many of Rav Kook's teachings and speeches and letters and important documents and put them in. So it's not an original, it's not Rav Kook's original. This is a compilation of Rav Kook's original text put together in Hebrew in Chazon HaGeula. So what we're going to do now is turn the page to page 3. We're going to go through, that's going to be our focus, to go through this inauguration speech that Rav Kook gave. For those who want to follow in Hebrew, because the way that it printed left to right, so I labeled all of the columns. And for those who want to follow in English, skip down to page 7, because Professor Lyman, years ago in tradition, translated this speech of Rav Kook in the original Hebrew in Chazon HaGeula into English. So for those who prefer the English, we have it. So if we have it, it doesn't cost us anything extra. So we're going to start on the bottom of column A on page 3 in the Hebrew, for those who are following in the Hebrew. And we're going to be listening to Rav Kook's words extremely carefully. Extremely carefully. Because what happens after this is that some people, by the way, even for decades later, decades, there is this canard that was somehow propounded that Rav Kook said about the secular studies at Hebrew University, Ki Mitzion Teitzitzor Dvar Hashem Yerushalayim. He had to write a letter to Rav in Morocco, Rav Shalom Meshas, dispelling that rumor, because people went around saying, Rabbi Kook said that, you know what the Torah is going to come from? It's going to come from Hebrew U. And this didn't die. So if you look carefully at the words, we need to study them to hear exactly what he was saying and think about his audience and think about the moment and the significance of this event. This is the chief rabbi at one of the most historic cultural events of the century. So he starts with a pasuk, the bottom of column A. Si'i saviv einayach u'ri'i, kulam nikbitzu ba'olach. Open your eyes, lift your eyes, and look. All of them have gathered around you. Banayach, your children, merachok, yavo. They come from afar. Ubenosayach al tzatzat yamana. Oz tiriv in a heart. You'll see. This is incredible. And again, picture Rav Kook standing in front of 6,000 people on a mountainside on a beautiful spring day. You saw the picture. Ufachad verachav levaveich. You will fear and your heart will be open. Ki yafech alayach hamon yam chel goyim yavolach. That's the verse. And says Rav Kook, Hamo'ura ha'gadol shel hayom, the great event of today, Psichas ha'michlala ha'ivrit b'Yerushalayim b'harat Zofim b'tekes kol kach ne'edar, the opening ceremony with such an incredible event, b'chagigah kol kach ne'edar, with thousands of people. This is matzig lefaneinu es kazon ha'kodesh on the vuazu, how it is becoming, small steps becoming true. Even though, im, next paragraph, im adayin lo kulonu nikbatsu, not everybody's here yet. However, mizarahi hascholas kibbutz kol yosina. This is the beginning. This is just the start. Next paragraph. Makirim anu bereshis, gam bereshis mitzadeinu hayom. We see also, we recognize at the beginning of our march today, what the Navi says, oz tiri, you will see, Ayin ba'ayin on a roim miflos tamim deim goel Yisrael. We see what HaKadosh Baruch Hu has done by lifting us up. Laharim keren amo ben kol ame ha'aretz lasis lanu nir b'Yehuda. That after thousands of years of being dispersed and persecuted, God has lifted us up and put us back in this land. And to give us oz, strength, and spirit to create this. And who's here? A few lines later, Nochichusam shel tzir meromim levesuras ha'atzara. Who is present? Ha Lord Balfour, and shel hod malaso nitzivenu ha'elyon achenu Sir Herbert Samuel. Why is it called Sir Herbert Samuel achenu? That's right. Sir Herbert Samuel was Jewish. His name was Eliezer ben Menachem. And at the end, Rav Kook, he delivered a poem as a bracha. And he refers to Sir Herbert Samuel as Eliezer ben Menachem. Because he was a Yid. And shall hold ma'aloso ha'lord Allenby. Who is Allenby? He was the commander of the British forces that conquered Palestine from the Turks. So this is the who's who. Everybody's here, and Rav Kook is recognizing them by name. And the Chachamim, and the Gedolei Rabbanim, etc. Says Rav Kook, bottom of the paragraph, bottom of column B, Aval ha-pachad la-mahuba. Why does the Navi describe pachad, fear? Why is there pachad? Lama hikdim ha-navi es ha-pachad lefnei ha-imra urachav levaveich. It's not in consonance with the theme and the feel and the image and the energy of this verse. Top of column C. Ach, ka'asher nisa da'atenu l'meirachok l'shnos doros asher avru, as we lift up our mind and our thoughts to the previous generations, we understand why pachad is here. Why? Next paragraph. Shnei mahalchim yeshnam l'ruach Yisrael. There are two approaches in the spirit of Israel. Mahalach echad pnimi kulo kodesh. There is one approach that is internally focused, that is holy, holy, completely sanctity. Ulaor toraso bikirbo pnima. It is completely focused on the light of Torah. And it's internal. Lezeh shimshu kol mechonos haTorah asher me'olam. For this purpose, we had great Torah institutions from time immemorial. Mivtzarei haNeshama asher liYisrael. They are the fortresses of the spirit of the Jewish people. HaYeshivos shehayu v'sheheinan. The yeshivas that were and that are. Rav Kook, by the way, of course, established what he called the Yeshiva HaMerkazit HaOlamit, the Central Universal Yeshiva, which is that building on Rehov HaRav Kook, That's Heichel. Now Merkas Harav, as it's referred to, is in Kiryat Moshe Givat Shaul. But originally, it was in the middle of downtown. And that Rav Kook had established before the Yibin University was this 1925. He says, these yeshivas that were, that are, v'sha'asidos lios, v'socheinu lahagdil Torah lahadira, v'malom muvana, in its fullest expression, gadla v'oshra shel ha'she'ifa kedosha zos b'Yisrael midor dar, as a perpetuation and a fulfillment of our Jewish aspiration from generation to generation. And that's what we say, Shalom Rav Lo'avi Sorasech Ve'in Lama Michshol. And even in that, there is a concern. We always are cautious when we go into the Beis Medrash. The Gemara says in Brachas, Rabbi Nechunya Ben Akana used to say a tefillah, that I shouldn't make any mistakes. And when he would leave, he would say a tefillah. We're cautious in the world of learning. But he says, then there's another. HaMahalach HaSheni. What's that? Shel haruach ba'uma mishamish lo lo rak lahamakas hakodesh asher l'torah b'socha pnima. It does not serve an exclusively inwardly focused energy of delving deeply and kind of digging into the roots, the spiritual recesses of the inside of the Torah, of the spirit of the Jewish people. Rather, kiyim gam shvil lohotza v'achnasa. It is a channel that is open to the outside for both hotza, exporting, v'achnasa, and importing. Lohotzi musagim v'arachim shala yadus mitoch rishus hayochid shalonu el rishus haram shala olam haklali. To export, to shine forth from the internal Rishus HaYachad, the private domain of the Jewish people, out to the entire world. That's Hotzah. For that reason, says Rav Kook, we are supposed to be an Or Amim. For this idea, we can now focus, he says, L'shem Kach, Tukal HaMichlala L'shamesh Klir Machshir L'gadol V'nisgav. For that, we can use this institution, the Hebrew University, to achieve that goal, to export to the world, to the broader global community, ideals of Judaism that can inspire and enrich humanity. Says Rav Kook, I'm on the bottom of page 4, column C, last two lines, V'kan hu ahuvai makom apachad. Here, says Rav Kook, my beloved, my dear friends who are gathered, I look around at you in this incredible gathering. He says, this is where the pachad is. He says, because there were times, many times, in the past, that people have opened the channel to allow Jewish ideals to be exported, to transmit them to the outside world by opening the door, that portal, to the outside world. He says, for example, third line from the page, end of the page, the translation of the Torah into Greek. When the Eretz Yisrael Dika Jews were afraid, whereas the Greek Jews were happy. Turn to page 5. And not only that, he says there was not just hotza'at exporting, there was also ha'isalanu gamkein uvda shel hachnasa. We also imported ideas from the broader world. Zirmei ha'tarbuyos ha'shonos, chachmas yivonis v'yesar tarbuyos shel amei ha'sevel. Other cultures, not just Greek ones, we have introduced them into our own lexicon, into our own library. That asher nivgashnu imam b'meshach zmani toldosenu ashonim, they have encroached within us. And when we kishabon anuboim lidei cheshbon ata, second paragraph, when we go to think about it, hatkuvas asher avru roim anu shelo lechinam haya hapachad, we see that it was not for naught that people were concerned. The concern is there. There's a real concern. Why? Because Next paragraph. V'zeu davar baruhu lanu. Shemikol eila hachugim asher kiblu es ha-shnei hazramim halalu shalach nasav ha-otzoa b'loshim pachad. The people who opened their arms without any hesitation to the flow of knowledge and values and information back and forth, hachnasa notza, without any inhibition, without any filters, without any hesitation, what happened to them? Lo rabim heim bekirbeinu mibnei b'neim. Shem shutvim ka'is imanu ba'avodosenu hakveda v'akdosha shal b'nei artzenu v'shal tchias amenu. They're not with us anymore. Because you know what happened to them? They got carried away. They were carried away in the tide of assimilation. Because if you open that portal and you're not concerned, you don't have the pachad, and you just open your arms to take in whatever the world has to sell at any given time, you're going to be lost. Nishtaf b'shetef hagalim. They are swept away in the waves. The image, right? The waves of the cultural Zerme Hamon Hayam Shelchel Goyim Asherbo Elenu.
So, I'm not sure I'm getting this right. The feedback, it looks like Rav Kook is on the side saying the fear is real. You either fight it.
Well, 1 second, we haven't finished. He's still in the middle of his talk. Let's let him finish before we analyze. He told us so far there were those institutions and people and perspective who were inwardly focused, the world of the yeshivas. And then there were others that were open to an exchange of ideas. But he says in that exchange of ideas, those who were open to the outside world, when that's done without caution and responsible hesitation, that has led to disastrous, catastrophic spiritual consequences. Rak Eile, says Rav Kook, only from these, Rak Me'ele, Asher Yashvu Lebetach B'Mivtzar Ma'pniyim Shalanu, only of those who have stayed exclusively in the world of Torah. Note how Rav Kook does not denigrate the denizens of the Torah citadels. He doesn't say everybody has to be like me to support the Hebrew University. There is a place for people who are Torah only. And he gives them credit to say only those people. And v'gam me'ela asher omnam kimlu v'gam nasnu hotziu v'gam echnisu erkem v'sigim al yedei ha'shevil ha'ruchani ha'mamatzeh ben Yisraelim aval hayachas shalahem ha'malach hazeh lo haya rak b'tzura shel rachav lev ki im gam ha'pachad nilva etzlam el rochav ha'lev v'chedvas haruach asher bo me'otzim ha'chazon ha'gadol shalamon yam asher lechel goyim me'ele yatzu kol ela kochos ha'yitzira ha'ne'emanim ha'po'alim b'binyaneinu ha'gadol b'chol lev v'nefesh v'chol ha'gush ha'gadol shalom ha'ne'eman l'diglo. Only the Jews who either were Torah only, settled firmly in the bastions of Torah, or those who engage the secular world with a sense of trepidation and caution and concern and hesitation, only their descendants are inspired today to build a Torah world. Because anybody who opens themselves up, berochav lev, the wide heart, which is exactly the diuk and the pasuk, he says, if you open up berochav lev to the art and the cinema and the philosophy without any Torah prism, without any filter, without any caution, he says, you're bound to be swept away. Yes.
Didn't we see this before? We saw this throughout our history with Avraham Avinu, with Yitzhak, and then with Yaakov. And if we learned anything from history, we'll know that the culmination of unity happened with Yaakov and with his sons. So we had Avraham Avinu who was willing to go and open up that portal up to the outside world. Yitzhak couldn't handle that, so he was isolationist, right? And Yaakov lived in that world and actually brought betterment to the world and to us as Jews, right? So are you telling me that these people, the smart people in the world at this time, okay, that they still held that and we still hold that today?
So I would say let's reformulate, tell me if I'm getting it right, let me reformulate it like this. Yaakov Avinu, he had two wives, because they complemented two dimensions, al pi Kabbalah, of his personality that reflected the synthesis of Abraham and Yitzchak. And Yaakov Avinu had 12 sons. And those sons reflect different components of a whole integration. And so each of those sons connected with a different aspect, and as a totality, as a full society, it creates a wholesomeness. So maybe he had a son named Yosef who was busy as an accomplished economist or bureaucrat, or you know, however you look at Yosef's role in a financial world as a business person, and that he had a son whose name was Yehuda, who was Lahoras Lafan of Goshna, Chazal Fium, as exclusively focused in the world of Torah, and they ultimately complement each other. But to understand that they had different perspectives. There were students of Yehuda who didn't belong working for Yosef, and vice versa. And these are trends that you're pointing out exist over time, and they still exist ad hayom hazeh. And so kind of what we are studying and what we're learning and what we're appreciating about ourselves over the course of this year in our theme of Mesorah, to kind of take it back a step, is to recognize that we have a shevet, we have a connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we have a role of godliness that we need to take seriously. We need to take it seriously to understand it and to be inspired by it and to use it as a guide for our life. So, to me, this talk is very important. It builds our whole Torah Hashkafa. Because when we're going, if we are of this Masorah, to be open to that outside world and to engage it, if we don't hear the words and the cautionary note of Rav Kook, of the pachad, of just engaging, so then what's happening to our souls, what's happening to our community, what's happening to our Yiddishkeit? It's at risk of being swept away by the waves. You know, that is something that we need to reckon with. And if we don't do that, it's at our own peril. And by the way, if it's not just at our own peril, it is without any Masorah and any legitimacy. Because these are the pillars, these are the principles, these are the guiding values that need to inform our decisions. Right? So we talked about secular studies last week in the Hebrew University. For us, for those of us who are engaged in higher education, we need to be constantly asking ourselves the question, well, how does this choice further my Avodas Hashem? We're going to talk about it more in Mirtz Hashem next when we talk about leisure, where it's also mitbate a lot. But in terms of what places a person choose to study, at what time in their life, at what stage in their life, what context, these are all decisions that need to be made with the pachad and the rochav lev. But if we don't have that appropriate yirah shamayim, you could substitute yirah shamayim for pachad here. So without yirah shamayim, then we are in danger of being swept away. And I'm not going to make any editorial comments about what's happening sociologically out there in the world. I'm speaking purely theoretically. Yeah, Glenn. So, is it more clear now?
Well, I guess I'm taking it a little bit differently, where he's kind of commenting on the reason he's standing there, which is a brave thing. He's got a lot of critics among his own colleagues, and he says, okay, so here's this dividing line. Those people who face the fear and those people who turn away from the fear. Well, so if that's the dividing line, then that's totally wrong, because if you go entirely within this citadel, this question you talk about, they have the same argument, always, continuously. Do you slavishly follow or do you argue about what's true? So therefore, he's telling his critics that you're wrong to make it this black and this white, because even within your white, you have the exact same, it's really the struggle itself, wherever that line is.
Right, so maybe to reformulate, so make sure I'm getting it correctly, which is that Rav Kook is pointing out there is maybe what we could call the Torah-only view, the exclusive inward view, and then you have the synthesis view, or the open portal of entry. But that both camps have their internal struggles. Right? Even in the Torah-only, there is the tefillah of Rabbi Nechonya ben Akana. We have to be on guard, even within just the internal world of the Torah, to make sure that our midos are correct, that our values are in line, that our decisions, you know, the halachic decisions, even internally, we need to make those decisions. So there is a pachad and the element of internal as well. Yeah. Okay, so let's, I just want to finish. I don't want to run out of time. So says Rav Kook on the last column on Dalet, Avol eich mashkitim es apachad. So how do you silence the fear? How do you channel the fear? Go to the top of E. So here's Al Kain, Al Zehnini, Rabosai. You can tell it's a speech. Rabosai! I'm not sure what the British thought of the term Rabosai. That's good. We have to get this. I don't know how you can't really translate that for British English. Betor Shaliach Tzibur, as a representative of the community, Omer Al Habama Hakvuda Hazos, Mosalochem, as Hogus Libo Shalayados Anemona. I'm going to share with you the inner thoughts of traditional Judaism in many circles. And what's that? Next paragraph. Imne Daif, we know. Shamichlala Levada, Lo Tisakem Eskol Hadarush L'chayeno Ha'amamiyim. We need to know that this university is not the end-all and be-all of intellectual accomplishment of our people. It's not the end goal, and it's not the complete. Kiyim tiyelanu berosh v'rishon yeshiva shel Torah. That's what he says to everybody there. The first thing, the most primary and prominent institutions we need are the yeshivas. Gedolos ve'itanos. Those that were and those who will be. With the help of God to establish them in Yerushalayim, to establish the light, fifth line, or mayor, be'or shel Torah b'Yisrael, l'chol miktzoseh ba'alach v'agora, b'chokhma ha'masis v'chokhma sadas, deos, in all areas of Jewish knowledge, piske halacha, dine Torah, values, ethics, musar, philosophy, yeshivos, kishmon, we need traditional yeshivos. That's what Rav Kook says at the inauguration of the Hebrew University. He says, Yeshivos kishmon hamachononos kameyaz es ruach ha'uma b'chol malo bitchona. Ve'im ze, and with that, tiyeh ha'michlala omeres al gova kazeh shiskare shem shemayim v'shem Yisrael v'eretz Yisrael al yada. And side by side with the great yeshivos, which are the primary educational beacons, is the Hebrew University. V'lo yischalo b'shum ofen, it should never be disgraced bein bitzad ha'minahalim, whether it's the administrators, beimitzad ha-morim, from the teachers, beimitzad ha-talmidim, ubiyichud especially, sheyu ha-morim asher lelomdei hayadus, lelimudei hayadus, of course from Tanakh, all of them should be anashim, im godlos hamadash alem, yugam ken shlome emune Yisrael b'dei oseim. You have to have educators who are both scientifically, meaning academically, of the highest caliber, and of total religious commitment. No biblical criticism, no kfira, because it has to be a university that is in sync with the world of the yeshivas. Ba'ofen zeh, in this way, yavi lanu hapachar asher nefached, this healthy concern will drive yachad im ha-ri'yah gdolah shalanu, with the vision that we have of this incredible day and this yearning, this longing of the going back to the image of the waves of the rays of light emanating ulatchuna kazos inenu shofim, and from this to this desire we are longing, and for that we also, in the synthesis model, pray the tefillah of Rabbi Nechunya ben Akana that we shouldn't fail, because it's a risky business. V'yeshev, last paragraph. V'yeshev ami ben neve shalom uvenuchos sha'ananos v'mishkanos miftachem v'nizke liris v'simchas gviyenu goyenu ubebinyan beis mikdashenu v'tifartinu asher elov yinu v'kol agoyim l'kachas Torah mitzion d'var Hashem Yerushalayim. That is the description. We go back, remember, a couple of weeks ago when we spoke about the yesodos of our view, of our values, the idea of nuance, the idea of the relationship between Kodesh and Chol, and the personal responsibility. So now Rav Kook concludes on the next page, which we're out of time to go through the whole thing, the tefillah. So now Rav Kook reads a poem, the Ribon Kola Olomim Asha'imcha Makor Chayim Ubir Chachma Vadas Konanus Tevel Malo. You could read it on your own. A beautiful poem that again concludes Kimitzion Teitzor Dvar Hashem Yerushalayim. Rav Kook gives us the the framework for Torah only and synthesis, and the pachat, especially in the synthesis model, and the concern. That was the optimistic view of Rav Kook. So let's fast forward to the Hebrew University, which is not, at the end, in complete consonance with Rav Kook's vision. So go to page 10. And then I conclude today, I want to share with you this book called When God Becomes History, Historical Essays of Rabbi Avram Isaac Cohen Cook, edited by Bezalel Naor. Bezalel Naor is a very prominent English translator, scholar of Rav Kook's works. And this work, he translates many of Rav Kook's important historical speeches, including he has a section on this talk. And in this section, he has two pieces that he gets from Rav Moshe Tzvi Neria. Rav Moshe Tzvi Neria, the founder of the Bnei Akiva movement, he was a close disciple of Rav Kook, and he wrote several volumes of synopses of teachings of Rav Kook, vignettes that he heard about Rav Kook, letters, things like that. So let's conclude with two little vignettes that Bezalel Naor includes in this volume as translations from Rav Neria. Who wants to read these two? Somebody want to start? This one is in English. Rav Chaskel Sarna, with the Rosh Hashiva, the Chevron of Rosh Hashiva, from Slabodka, on his relationship with Rav Kook. Who wants to read this on the left side? Not everybody at once. Go ahead. Loud voice. Thank you.
The Rosh Hashiva of Chevron, the Gaon Rabbi Ezekiel Sarna, I can't read what the Ezekiel...
Zatzal. Okay, that's okay.
Zatzal was one of the great admirers of Rav Kook, and more than once he lavished upon him praise as a Gaon and a Tzaddik.
Okay. Just by the way, in case you meet someone who's learning in Chevron and Knesset Yisrael, this is a good just tidbit to have in your back pocket. Okay, go ahead.
Once he especially noted the Rav's desire to influence and to bring close to true Judaism, Reb Chatzkel, as he was referred to affectionately, told the following story. I once went with some request to the Rav. As I was ascending the stairs to his home, I encountered two distinguished gentlemen leaving the Rav's residence. Their dress told me they were not affiliated with the religious community. Approaching, I was able to observe them up close. I noted on their faces a look of deep emotion. Once inside the Rav's abode, before I had a chance to open my mouth, the Rav addressed me. Certainly His Honor has come about some pressing matter, but first I would like to relate what just took place. Two professors from the university paid me a visit to discuss a certain topic. However, I seized the opportunity and began discussing with them matters of belief. The discussion dragged on, and at its conclusion, I had the feeling that I aroused in them thoughts of teshuva, and that I brought them to the way of faith.
It's an interesting episode, because Rav Kook is seeing that his vision of the michlala that he sought to be fused in consonance with the world of the yeshivas did not materialize. Yet he persisted to try to educate and inspire and bring these people to stay in close contact with them and to bring them closer to the Ribbono Shel Olam. The last piece is a letter from Rav Huttner, Zichrono Livracha, the great Rosh Yeshiva of Chaim Berlin, who himself was a student of Rav Kook. My dearly beloved friend, he writes in a letter in the early 1960s, 1962, to Rav Neria. I will tell you exactly what transpired. I first arrived in Eretz Yisrael a few days before the opening of the Mount Scopus campus of the university. This was when I first became acquainted with our teacher, Zecher Tzadik v'Kadosh Livracha. In those days, he spoke with me extensively of his decision to be present at the ceremony. He clarified his decision by weaving from world to world, from celestial palace to celestial palace, as was his wont. The speech would pour forth. One of the pillars of his talks was the promise given him that there would be no chair in this university for Bible criticism. A long time passed, and I happened to be present in our teacher's roommate, rest in peace, when someone walked in and reported the context of Professor Torchiner, whose name was changed later to something else, a Hebraicized lecture at the university the evening before. Of course, the whole lecture was full of Bible criticism of the worst sort. Our Holy Master gazed at me with a look of disappointment, bitterness, frustration, and piercing pain, such that to this day I feel this look like the prick of 100 needles at once. I was astounded by this look. Then, without meaning to offend my lips, pronounced the words, "Evidently, in addition to knowing the soul, one must know the body." I saw fit to transmit to you this anecdote. A good inscription for the new year, ascend yourself and raise others with you as you are accustomed. With love, Yitzchak Huttner. So this is kind of a downer, the way to conclude this discussion and this letter from Rav Huttner. And I'm sure this letter is taken in context of probably a life of nuance that had its accomplishments and its disappointments. The open question still remains. Knowing this, did Rav Kook regret that he spoke at the opening of the university? Did he not believe in the two visions that he described? We'll never know. You have to ask him. But the concepts that he put out there, they are still valid. And as we have seen, they are still important. And this conclusion, which is not a happy ending, it's not the tale of happily ever after, reminds us of the importance of caution and of concern when we approach these issues. And that we need to consistently reflect on our own Yiras Shamayim, not to check anybody else's tzitzis, but those of us who subscribe to this second approach with that openness to the exporting and importing, the hotzah v'achnasa, thinking about that in light of our values to make sure that we are living lives that are truly inspired, that both have the pachad and the rochav lev to bring a kiddush Hashem in everything that we do. Yes?